Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hey, y'all. It's John Hancock sitting in for Mark Reardon. Mark is on a well-deserved vacation. Do we know where he's going, Klein?
He is down in Florida right now.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he just beat that hurricane by just a week or so.
Beat the hurricane. Lots of COVID down there, I'm sure. I'm sure he's taking appropriate precautions. Well, it was May the 21st, 2019. A young Terrion Phillips of St. Louis, using a handgun, stole a red Mitsubishi in an armed robbery, which he drove to his residence overnight. And on the next day, May 22nd, 2019, it just so happened that a gentleman was washing his truck in Fairground Park. Vincent Sanders, 56 years old, he's outside washing his truck. Along comes Terrion Phillips in the stolen red Mitsubishi, attempts to rob Mr. Sanders and steal Mr. Sanders' truck, ends up shooting and killing Mr. Sanders. And he was charged with, let's see here, it was one count of first-degree murder, two counts of armed robbery, and two counts of armed criminal action against Terrion Phillips. Well, he's, I guess, been in jail since then awaiting trial. The prosecutor failed to show up from the circuit attorney's office.
What?
The prosecutor didn't show up, so the case
literally
was dismissed and recharged. Of course, that's not the first time that's happened. Earlier last month, or this month, Circuit Judge Singhauser noted that the armed criminal action, first-degree murder, and unlawful gun possession charges against Brandon Campbell were being dismissed because for three consecutive months, no one from the circuit attorney's office showed up to prosecute the case. Now, today, the circuit attorney's spokesman has said that the prosecutor on the case was pregnant and that the review of family leave policies show corrective action is needed to prevent a repeat occurrence. Defense attorney Chet Pleben says a new prosecutor should have been named, but adds that there were too many breakdowns. Well, I would say too many breakdowns. And joining us to talk about it is a gentleman with a storied career as a prosecutor. He was the assistant United States attorney for the United States Eastern District of Missouri. He did that job for many years. He's now a partner at Kessler Williams. Before that, he was an assistant prosecutor in St. Charles County. He knows prosecution. J.D. Davis is our guest. Mr. Davis, welcome to KFDK.
Thank you, John. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
How does this happen?
I tell you, I've been a prosecutor for 30 years, maybe, and I literally used to lose sleep over the issue of discovery. That, you know, in a adversarial system where the accuser and the accused are literally on opposite sides of the table, the balance of fairness rests with this discovery process that the prosecution has to give to the defense everything they're going to use to potentially convict my client so that we could prepare a proper defense. And they simply failed to do it in the Brandon Campbell matter and figuratively dropped the ball three times.
I mean, that's just staggering. You know, logistically, I guess, is Mr. Campbell still incarcerated then awaiting trial? Is that his status?
Yeah, that charge was immediately refiled, which seems to be the method of operation of the circuit attorney's office lately. Well, more than lately. But, yeah, it was immediately refiled, and he's being held without bond. He was being held without bond, and now he is being held without bond.
And one of the problems we have at the city jail, of course, they've closed the workhouse. So all of the inmates are now at the city jail, which hopefully they fixed the locks by now. But you've got people sitting in there literally for years who have a constitutional right to a speedy trial. That's what our Constitution guarantees any of us. That's not happening. And how do you fix something like this?
Well, I don't know. There is the circuit attorney's office is bleeding talent. My understanding is the gentleman who dismissed the Tarion Phillips matter, which is the initial defendant you were talking about, is now also the new prosecutor on the refiled Campbell matter, has only been a circuit attorney for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course,
he tried a murder case last week that resulted in an acquittal. So, I'm sure he's a very talented individual. I know he was a former public defender. I don't know him personally, but to give that kind of, when I was a prosecutor for 6 weeks, I was doing traffic tickets
right.
in St. Charles County.
Yeah, and in your murder cases, the armed criminal action cases, illegal weapons cases, typically those are going to be handled by a senior member in the attorney's office.
Yeah, and, you know, you started this section segment with Mr. Phillips. He was dismissed voluntarily. The prosecutor dismissed that. The judge didn't necessarily throw that one out. But he cited in his reason for requesting a delay and ultimately dismissing the case is that all previous circuit attorneys assigned to the case have left the office and that he's brand new with 6 weeks of employment under his belt.
That's just crazy stuff. J.D. Davis is our guest. He was the assistant United States attorney in the United States District Court, Eastern District of Missouri. He's got 30 years as a prosecutor. He's now with Kessler Williams here in St. Louis. And the circuit attorney is an elected position. Kim Gardner was just reelected, soundly reelected to her position by the voters in the city of St. Louis. Is there any recourse outside of the ballot box if an attorney is failing in their position? Can the bar get involved? Are there any systems that can make a change here?
Well, certainly the bar can get involved if there's disciplinary problems. I don't know that Ms. Gardner necessarily is facing that. The attorney general perhaps should at least have a word with her about just the systemic problems that just keep resurfacing in that office.
JD, it's Sue Thomas here. At what point does she get what else does she have to do to have someone step in or get reprimanded? I mean, to me, this is just appalling. Does she have to actually break a rule and wouldn't not showing up three times be one?
Sue, I wish I knew the answer to that question. You know, the prosecutors have the burden of production and the burden of persuasion. And I constantly was carrying the figurative ball down the field. To think that I would have dropped it that many times and not had something happen yet is astonishing to me.
Yeah, and so now we've got these cases, and it's not just these cases where nobody shows up. They're actually losing murder cases, as you mentioned, and it's not just a couple. I mean, they've lost a number of murder cases, which means if you get acquitted, that you're right back out on the street and you can't be tried for that case again. I know that in the U.S. Attorney's Office, a lot of the gun crimes, you all just kind of took them over federally, right?
Yes. You know, there's dual jurisdiction on those types of offenses, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, especially under Jeff Jensen and now under Sailor Fleming, is really fronting that charge. That I can't necessarily say they're taking over for the Circuit Attorney's Office, but where there's dual jurisdiction, you see federal prosecution very frequently.
I guess I'm wondering, JD, like in some of these cases, are the victims' families just beside themselves? I mean, if this were to happen and it was a relative of mine, I just can't even imagine. Wouldn't I be down at the courthouse or calling or doing anything I could? What is the response from the victims? It must be awful.
I'm sure the phone is ringing. There is, in every prosecutor's office, and I know certainly in the circuit attorney's office, there is an office called victim witness assistance or some variation of that. In fact, usually that's the spokesman that speaks on those kinds of issues to the press. I'm sure that that phone is ringing off the hook. I know, I think it was KMOV did a piece last winter about the effect on the victims of these either acquittals or just failing to prosecute.
So I was downtown working the election night at KMOX. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I came out the door, and a gentleman was going through the trunk of my car in the parking garage, which apparently I'd left unlocked.
Oh, boy.
And fortunately, he wasn't armed, and fortunately, he was stoned out of his mind, and he's just kind of wandered off. So the police picked him up, and they took him in, and Jennifer Joyce was the circuit attorney at the time. And that victim's office that you spoke of, they called me. They said, you know, do you want to press the charges or how do you want to? And they were very helpful, and they were on it. They were on top of it. And that was, you know, as offenses go, you know, all I had in the trunk of my car, I think, was some Whopper wrappers. But be that as it may, you know, do we have any indication that that office is poorly functioning as well as the rest of the office?
I don't know. I can't answer that, John. I simply don't know. But I got to believe they've got their hands full. And if you know, there's a lack of personnel on the lawyer side, I got to believe there is on the support side as well. So they're probably struggling to keep up like everyone else in that office.
J.D. Davis is our guest, a longtime prosecutor in the St. Louis area. And I don't know if you have an opinion on the closing down of the city workhouse. But it seems to me that we've got all these languishing inmates whose trials aren't happening because prosecutors aren't showing up and we're cutting down our jail space. Why would they shut down the workhouse in the midst of this?
Well, you know, we have a new mayoral administration, and that was a campaign point. But I agree with you. We can't fix this by reducing the jail space. Granted, workhouse needs some improvement, but it doesn't solve the problem of the overcrowding, and you know, it only exacerbates the issues that we already have with city jail. I'm with you. I don't know if they got the locks fixed yet or not.
Well, I mean, at least the locks worked at the workhouse. But you know, this is what a mess. I mean, this is a complete mess. Hey, JD, thanks so much for your time, for your insight.
Thank you.
All right. I mean, here we are in a city that is ravaged. I mean, ravaged with crime, and we're defunding the police. We're not paying overtime, and maybe we will under this new bill that they're working through the Board of Aldermen now. They'll get some overtime back. And we're closing jails. We're not prosecuting criminals. Those we are prosecuting, we're sending rookie prosecutors in who are losing capital murder cases.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you just think about the multiplicity of this. And, of course, as soon as you get acquitted, you've killed someone, you've gotten acquitted, so you can't be charged, and you're back on the street.
Yeah.
And no parole, no, you're acquitted. Yeah, because the state or the circuit attorney couldn't make the case for murder. And then on top of all of that, something like 65% of the homicides committed in St. Louis go unsolved. No one is ever arrested for them. Mm. So this is just of that 35% that are actually getting arrested, that they're not going to trial and they're not getting locked up.
Might I point out, the only coverage of this is this, right?
Yeah.
Radio people will talk about, and that's it.
Yeah.
Nobody is saying it. They won't even, and I bring up the victims because I think, you know, this would fall into a category where you would want to talk about the victims. We love to talk about victims in the media. Nothing. Crickets.
It's crazy.
It's insanity.
I know it's beating a dead horse, but how does this help get people downtown?
It doesn't.
It's all part of the same vicious cycle. Wow.
When it starts getting darker earlier, I may not substituting the Mark Reardon show anymore. We'll see what happens. Hey, they got COVID happening all over Southwest Missouri, and a good friend of mine who's the mayor of Springfield, Missouri, he was on Face the Nation just yesterday. Wow. He's going to join us to talk about what's happening down in his neck of the woods. Mayor Ken McClure of Springfield joins us next. It's the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. It's the Mark Reardon Show here on 97.1 FM Talk. Mark is on vacation. I'm John Hancock. I'm sitting in for Mark while he is away for the next couple of days. Well, we all are aware, we've certainly seen reported in the news, that there are outbreaks of this new Delta variant of the coronavirus that are affecting lots of places. And one of those places that's feeling the brunt of this right now is our friends down in Springfield, Missouri. And right now we are joined by the mayor of Springfield, Ken McClure. Ken, welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Well, good afternoon. I'm pleased to be with you today.
Well, I'm delighted that you would take the time. Let's start with where we are right now in the Springfield area. How many are in the hospital? Are you still seeing a rise in cases? What's happening?
Yes, we are. Our count today for hospitalizations is 251.
Wow.
Between Cox and Mercy, and that's a substantial increase from even Friday when we hit a new peak at that point. So this is a new high for us, and they continue to come in. So that's disturbing, and that's going to be going on, I'm afraid, for a while.
How close to capacity are you?
There is still a little room, but we are asking for help from the state for additional alternative care facilities in the event that they do hit the capacity. And there are a lot of needs that go with that, primarily staffing. So we're close. We're having to watch it very, 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 very intently. And I think if the projections are true, we may get there at some point before much too longer.
Well, and of course, Springfield's not an island, and Springfield's not the only place in Southwest Missouri that's experiencing this surge. So it's not like you can send folks down to Nixa or some, you know, Christian County or Stone County. Their beds are probably filling up as well. Is that the case?
Well, we are a medical hub, both with Cox and Mercy. And so we service not only Springfield, but much of Southwest Missouri and even in down into Northwest Arkansas. And so roughly over half of the patient count is from outside Greene County. So that's that just goes with the territory.
Sure.
With our health care facility coverage. But we are not an island. We're actually a hub, and we're a destination. And I think that's one of the reasons that we are experiencing the extreme exposure that we're having.
And, of course, we're seeing that the vaccination rates are lower in Southwest Missouri. They're low generally in Missouri. But let me ask you about the availability of vaccines. Do you feel confident that you've got the sufficient number of vaccines that people would take them?
Yes, we do. We have an ample supply of vaccinations, and so it's a question of getting the word out about the availability of it and getting really buy-in from so many trusted partners. We've been reaching out and had good cooperation from our faith community. Many of our larger churches have been hosting vaccination clinics. Last week, on a bright note, we had the highest number of vaccinations that we've had for several weeks, and we're hoping that that will continue. The business community is stepping up. One of our major employers, SRC Reman, is actually helping us with incentives that they're putting in. They've got 1,700 employees throughout several plants in the Springfield region, and they're stepping up. Others are as well. And so what I have been urging is what Springfield is famous for, and that's collaboration. Very little of any consequence happens here without a lot of people weighing in and helping, and this is just a prime need for the collaboration. So between education, the faith community, the business community, not-for-profit, and healthcare, of course, I'm hopeful that we can really ramp up those vaccination clinics and get people to come and participate in them.
Yeah, I saw on the front page of the Springfield Newsletter yesterday that there was a wide variety of community leaders with their photographs urging folks to take the vaccine. That's the kind of thing you're talking about.
That's exactly. And it gets down to people that are trusted. We had everyone from Senator Blunt on there to the bishop of our diocese to our athletic coaches at Missouri State University, the education leaders, business leaders, faith leaders, all across the spectrum. And the key, I think, is that these are trusted people.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think to get the rates up, it's going to rely upon people that our population trusts.
So where we sit now, you're seeing increasing numbers of people getting the vaccine, which is good. But, of course, we
yes.
know that that's a two-step process. So you take a shot, then there's and that protects you some, and then a month, 3 weeks, or a month later, depending on Pfizer or Moderna, you get the second shot. And then 2 weeks hence is when you're at your full level of protection. So it's a multi-week process, even if people are getting the vaccine today. So you have to be projecting that the surge that you're seeing now with the Delta variant is going to get worse over the course of the next month or so. As you game plan this out, we're visiting with Mayor Ken McClure of Springfield, Missouri. As you game plan this out, have you guys come up with like a worst case scenario? What's the worst case that might happen here?
Well, the worst case is that we are looking at the alternative care facilities that we were asking for assistance from the state. Much of that is for staffing, RNs, therapists, that type of thing. And that's our worst case, and we're projecting that out here in the next few weeks in the event that that's needed. It will be a while before we peak, unfortunately, but what's going to happen is that this is spreading all throughout Missouri. Right now, it's going up north to our lakes. It's going to southeast Missouri. It's going to head up in the St. Louis area, central Missouri. And so my message to everybody is get prepared. Do as much as you can to get your vaccination rates up, because ultimately that's the only solution. If we can't get vaccination rates up, our goal is still 70%, and we have to hit it, because if we don't, we will not develop that herd immunity that we're going to need to continue to fight this.
And is your experience like that? I've heard from other places where the folks that are actually hospitalized are almost entirely unvaccinated. Is that your experience?
That's correct. The people in the hospital are very, very unvaccinated, almost to a person. There are a few breakthrough cases, sure. But the breakthrough cases are not on ventilators, and they are not experiencing any kind of symptoms nearly as severe. So we're dealing with people who are essentially young and unvaccinated, and that's unfortunate, because all of this is preventable.
Yeah, you know, I've got a very good friend of mine that lives in Springfield who was vaccinated in April, and he got it. Now he didn't have to go to the hospital, but he was pretty sick there for a few days. And so, you know, the mm-hmm. vaccine is not foolproof, but it certainly protects you from the worst aspects of this.
Exactly. And it's just like any vaccine. If you take a flu shot, you can still get the flu, but hopefully it will mitigate what your reactions are to it, the same way with these vaccines. And ultimately, that's the only solution that I see. If we don't get this under control, I fear that we're going to be under the spell of COVID for a long time, because variants will continue to mutate. And if we don't have vaccinations to help us fight that off, it's just going to be a long time before we can defeat this.
And all of us lived through the economic effects of this last year, when everything gets shut down, and the folks that own Silver Dollar City can't have visitors, and the ripple effect throughout the economy was devastating, the number of lost jobs and so forth. And it's, as you say, Mayor, this is preventable. I'm watching television yesterday, kind of minding my own business, getting ready for church. And there was Ken McClure on Face the Nation. I thought, hey, I know that guy. You and I go back about, I don't know, 20 years.
A long time.
And so there you are on Face the Nation, and looking good, by the way. You look good.
Well, thank you. It was quite an experience.
I'll bet it was. So what's the rigmarole with that? How early did you have to, go to a studio? Did you do it from home? How'd that all work?
Well, actually, we did it from the local CBS station, Color 10 here.
Yeah.
And they'd set up the link with CBS in Washington. And so I went over to Color 10, and the program went on live at 9:30 Central Time.
Right.
So I had to get there at 9 o'clock, and then they had a nice chair for me in the studio, put an earpiece in, and they talked to me from Washington, but I can't see anybody.
Right.
So it was quite a deal. You're talking to people. In this case, it was John Dickerson. It was a great interview. He got on a little bit, and we talked. And I did an interview with one of their producers on Saturday, and we just talked through facts and making sure that everybody had the right information. So I really enjoyed it. I'm not sure that I expected to enjoy it, but once it was done, I said, it was done right. So I felt good about it. And So I sat in color 10 in a studio by myself and looked at a camera and couldn't see anybody else.
Well, I'm no John Dickerson, so no need to be nervous about this. I'm just so happy that you took some time to join us. And we all are concerned about what you're dealing with down there in Springfield. It's quite a calamitous situation, perhaps, in the making. But I do know that the people of that city have very strong leadership in their mayor, and I wish you the very best, Ken McClure.
Well, thank you so much. The message to everybody is get vaccinated.
All right. That's exactly right. Get those vaccines, folks. And that was Ken McClure, the mayor of Springfield, Missouri. Sue, seems like a fairly simple thing, right? Just get vaccinated.
I'm sorry that I didn't get to hear the whole thing. It sounds like he's really plugged in. If they pull you out for Face the Nation, you know what's up.
Yeah, well, that's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that is weird, looking into a camera. And you can't even see the interviewer.
Nope, you know? And especially if you haven't done that before, I'm sure it's just surreal.
It's something else. So, and you got this little IFB thing in your ear, right? And if you got ears like I do, it falls out all the time. Because I got a little tiny, whatever you call those things on your ear. What do you call that, Klein? The inside of the ear.
Oh, that's not
a little
earpiece.
That's not
the. No, the lobe's the outside.
Yeah, the lobe is the thing that grows when you're dead. But the one in the middle is.
Wait a minute. The lobe grows when you're dead?
Well, it grows your whole life.
Oh,
really?
No, I don't think I knew that.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, the earlobe. So that's why you see some of these folks that have the ears hanging low. Wobbling to and fro.
Earlobes grow. Yeah. Hold on, I'm going in.
She's verifying the accuracy of my comment.
As you age, gravity causes the cartilage in your ears and nose to break down and sag.
Yes, thank you very
much. That's kind of sad.
So that's why, if you live to be 90, you're going to have big lobes going on.
Wow.
It's just kind of, I'm very, very blessed because I had little lobes to begin with. So
yours will be probably normal size by the time
They won't look like, George Burns.
They won't be out of control.
Right. Yeah. Remember George Burns? He had some big lobes back in the day. But I digress. What were we talking about? Oh, COVID. So, we're all pro-vaccination here, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so I don't know. I understand some people think, it's experimental or whatever, not finally approved. But here's the thing, man. This COVID will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're older and overweight, like some people are, and I don't want to mess around with that. So, the rationale for not getting, especially now that we've got this Delta variant. Here's my biggest fear. So the Delta variant, they say that our existing vaccines are good protection against the worst effects of the Delta variant.
Sure.
That's great. I'm happy about that. But we all know that this disease continues to mutate, and so. My concern is we've got the Delta variant now. If people keep getting it and spreading it, it's going to mutate into something else. And at some point, this thing is going to mutate into something that our vaccines no longer protect us from. That's my biggest fear.
And I'm kind of, I hope, I don't know, and maybe we can ask Fred about this. I would hope that Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson are kind of working on that as we speak,
where do we
go from here?
Yeah.
Because eventually, you're right, this is going to mutate and it will stop protecting us from the strains that are out there
now. Crazy. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would live through something like this.
Yeah.
This last year, it was the most surreal experience of all of our lives.
And I'm getting so used to the freedom of not having to wear a mask in our building, in stores. I'm fearful that we're going to go back to that.
Yeah,
you kind of wonder how many people are just going to say, and you know what? Screw it. I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to follow those rules. We tried it once.
Yeah.
We're now without masks. So why am I going to listen to this again?
Well, I almost feel like if somebody's chosen not to get back, because if you're not vaccinated, you've chosen not to be vaccinated
right.
at this point.
Right, absolutely.
It's not like, gosh, I don't know where to go, or they don't have, that's not the case.
There's plenty of them out there.
If you're not vaccinated at this point, you've chosen that course.
Yeah.
And I don't think the government should mandate that you get vaccinated. I don't think the government should come to your house and tie you down to the bed and inject your arm with a needle. you're taking on that risk. You've chosen to take on that risk. I don't know that I should have to alter my life to protect somebody that's chosen to take that risk on.
Right.
You know, I want to go to the ball game. I want to go out. I want to enjoy life. I want to eat at a restaurant, you know. And
I saw an interview with somebody down in Arkansas who is recovering from COVID in the hospital, took the chance, didn't get the vaccine.
Right.
And I think he put this the best way when CBS was talking to him. They said, what's your message to people that have not gotten the shot yet? And he said, well, essentially, you're kind of playing Russian roulette with this thing.
Totally.
You know, there's a good chance you will not get it, but if you do, it could wipe you out completely.
Yeah. Why
take that chance?
I agree. That's the voice of David Klein, Sue Thomas alongside. I'm John Hancock in for Mark Reardon. It's the cut of the day when we come back on the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Well, hello. It's the final segment of the Mark Reardon Show for the 19th of July, 2021. John Hancock in for Mark Reardon. He'll be back with you next Monday. Some scary moments over the weekend, Sue and David, at the Washington Nationals ballpark in our nation's capital. Outside of the armory, shots were fired, and no one was certain whether those shots were fired inside the stadium or outside the stadium, and right behind where those shots right in front, I guess, of where those shots were fired. The fans were in the stands. Some very, very, very testy moments. Here's Padres broadcaster Don Orsillo kind of laying out what happened.
Well, a very scary situation last night from Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. What we know now is there was a shooting outside of the ballpark. We didn't know that at the time as the umpires came off the field in between innings as we were headed to the bottom of the sixth. Fans were scurrying. The players were leaving. And as we found out today, Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr., and Will Myers assisted some fans into the Padres dugout as well as fans were streaming out of the ballpark. And the Nationals, of course, making some PA announcements during this, trying to figure out where the shooter was. They found out the shooter was outside, and this is what has taken place since. The game was suspended last night due to the incident surrounding Nationals Park. It will resume tomorrow, Sunday, July 18th at 1:05 Eastern. That's where we're at today, and this game will resume.
You know, something quite similar to that happened to me at Busch Stadium a few years ago, where an alarm went off. You know, a siren went off all over the stadium. It was a false alarm.
Oh, my God. What is it, a fire alarm?
It sounded like a fire alarm.
Huh.
And my son and I were sitting there, and we immediately headed for the exit. Because
natural instinct.
Right. And that's apparently what happened in D.C. over the weekend. And of course, those folks who were leaving the stadium were actually going out where the gunshots were actually being fired.
Right.
Wow. But one of the cool aspects of the story, where, you know, you think about these professional athletes and they're all narcissists and so forth. And well, that was not the case with the visiting Padres. And they actually brought fans down out of the stands, put them in the dugout and back into the clubhouse. Here's a little bit from shortstop Fernando Tatis Jr.
It was crazy. It was a panic moment, you know, being able just to see everybody running and not making sure what's going on. You know, it's just a moment that you really don't want to be part of. But, you know, we were part of it last night, but thank God everybody was good and safe.
He's, by all accounts, by the way, just a great, great guy.
Aww.
Yeah, great.
Absolutely.
Teammate, wonderful guy. He and Manny Machado, both the third baseman, were escorting fans down into the dugout to keep them safe. And here's a couple of the fans recounting their experience.
I mean, everybody was just running in pure chaos. And like I said, the cops didn't even seem to know what was going on the field. So, and I 100%, I don't know how to thank the Padres in any way. Like Tatis, Manny, and Myers, I don't know how to thank them. Like I said, they opened the gates and let us on the field to make sure that fans were safe. I don't know anybody that would ever do that.
I got to hand it to the fellow San Diegans. I didn't recognize most of them, but I did recognize Tatis. A few of the other Padres, you know, they were standing outside the dugout ushering people in from our section to try and keep as many people safe in the clubhouse as possible. Between them and the staff, they really handled it professionally, and they made it a lot easier to go through.
Yeah, and you know, the Padres, they're a good ball club this year. They haven't been a good ball club for a while.
Wow.
Their manager, one of the great names in all of baseball, Jace Tingler. Don't you love that? How'd you like your daughter to come home and say, I'm marrying Jace Tingler? But he got emotional talking about this.
I couldn't be any more proud to be a Padre, to be with the men in there. And obviously they're going out, they're thinking of their loved ones, and they're getting their families, and then it's just human nature. They're seeing fans and seeing people in panic. They did the right thing. And, you know, they obviously thought the safest place, maybe from where the shots were, and you don't know what's going on exactly, but they thought maybe the dugout could have been the safest place, and they led and welcomed and guided, you know, people in there, and I couldn't be any more proud.
That was Jace Tingler, the manager of the San Diego Padres. Very scary events in Washington, D.C. just over the weekend.
You know, the incredible thing, too, and I forgot about this until now, but not only to welcome fans into your dugout after something like that happens, but especially in this era of COVID.
Right.
You have no idea what the fans have,
yeah.
But you're not thinking about that. You're thinking that you just want them to be safe.
Right, and nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, it's sad that we live in a world where we have these mass shootings that take place with some regularity. And I don't know if you guys have ever thought about, you know, what would you do if you found yourself in it? Have you ever spent time thinking about that, Sue?
No, I probably should. I mean, it's a smart thing to do just so it would be an automatic reaction, whatever
right.
that would be.
Yeah, it's something you never really want to think about. But you're right, you have to prepare for it. And I talk to my wife about this all the time because she has to go through these trainings every year.
She's a teacher.
Because she's a teacher,
right?
Yeah. Mm. And you hate to put, you know, fifth grade students in that scenario, but unfortunately it's something that every adult and kid needs to think about these days.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, for me, I had that experience at Busch Stadium. Of course, it was a false alarm, but still, I didn't know when that alarm went off. And there I am with Junior. Junior's not going to protect me.
So. What? Maybe he will.
Well, there's a little bit of an inheritance there. But that's the story for tomorrow. I will be back tomorrow. It's the Mark Reardon Show, 97.1 FM Talk. Thanks for sticking around. We'll see you tomorrow.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.